What the f it's video.
Yeah, I
What's
pressed the
going
wrong
on?
button. I pressed the wrong button. There we go. Remember when you did that?
Man, you were naked. What's up?
Sorry, I didn't know that you're gonna see that.
Dang. That's funny.
Yeah,
Did
now you know.
I request a video? How could you do that? How did you do what you just did?
When you called, I pressed the button that
Said
said,
video?
yeah, video answer instead of.
Oh, I didn't know you could do that.
I don't think I did either. Now you know I record teabagging my
Yeah.
desktop computer, or I
Have
mean
you
my
heard that
laptop.
song by Kirby Crackle? Tea Bagged? I love that
I
song.
haven't heard the song, but
Yeah, you gotta
I
hear
know
that
the
song.
term from gaming and stuff, I
I
guess,
never
comes
knew
from.
it was a gaming term. I knew it was a thing, like to get tea bagged.
Yeah, well, I guess it's technically comes from, I don't know where it's like a chicken and the egg.
Yeah.
What came first, the balls or the scrotum, but I know it's something that they started doing to each other in those
Chat.
big shooting games, you know,
Oh,
like Call of
yeah.
Duty and those type of games.
Yeah.
I've never been into those type of games, but you
I'm
can't
almost.
get through life without knowing what teabag.
Yeah, you can't. I'm almost to pass out from a food coma. I ate like really a lot.
This morning?
I made breakfast, a lot of
Wow.
hash browns and eggs, and man,
You made it?
yeah, I overdid it, man. I'm almost in a food coma right now.
Did you make it just for you, or did Barb have what you made too?
Did I make it just for me? No, I never just make anything just for me.
Only if you're home by yourself, right?
No, then it's the microwave.
Yeah.
I don't even
Oh,
attempt
then you
to.
wouldn't even bother, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely more satisfying to cook for more of the one person, 'cause to take the time when it's just for yourself, it's kind of hard to work up the energy to bother. You know? But like when I was living by myself, a lot of times I would get those. I was still eating meat. I would
Wheats.
get
Oh,
those.
you ate meat back then?
Oh yeah, I've only been a vegetarian for a few years. Well, I was for a little while in high school too, but I've eaten meat for more years than I haven't.
Ah.
But I used to get those. I would just get one of those rotisserie chickens from the supermarket. They're already
Yeah,
cooked.
and then you can make a bunch of stuff with them.
Yeah, I could eat a
That's how we
couple
make
days off that.
enchiladas, yeah.
Yeah.
No, you
And
could actually shred it too, and
oh
then
yeah, you could
do all
use it for other
kinds of
stuff.
stuff with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would just get some pieces of that, and I'd do some mashed potatoes out of the box and
Yeah.
a can of green beans or something. But
There you go.
there you go. So I got a new doggy.
Yes, that's awesome.
New addition to the family.
I
She's.
love her ears.
Oh, I know. They're.
Yeah.
That's what drew us in. I
They're like bat ears.
know, and they take everything in too. Her
Yeah.
hearing is crazy. Part of it, I think, is because, you know, Luna was deaf in her last couple years, or her last year at least. So to go from a dog that doesn't hear anything to a dog that hears everything.
Plus
But,
she's learning like the environment. Do you know what I mean?
yep.
She just had
Yeah.
pups and now she's in a new home and she's got to be alert to know what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
And once she give her a couple months and she'll be relaxed. You'll be making noise. She won't even know what the hell happened.
Yeah, she's a little skittish. And we expected that because she's been through so much, you know.
Yeah.
She went from, they found her in Ohio as a stray, and she had eight puppies, and it was a kill shelter. And there's this local organization, try to find foster families to take dogs from kill shelters until they can be adopted. And so the foster family here took in her and her 8 puppies, and they already had several dogs in their house. But so then they were posting about her, saying that she was coming here, and she's having her, she had to take care of her puppies for a while. And then once the puppies, she had 8 puppies, and once they were all adopted out, they put her up for adoption, and we applied. And she's 2 years old, and it's interesting because I feel like she either was abandoned or got lost, because she's not completely wild.
Understands
She's not
things.
very wild at all, really. She's just rough around the edges. It's
Yeah.
like somebody started to train her, and she's housebroken and everything, so she knows certain things already, but she's not consistent, you know?
Yeah.
So, but she's such a sweet dog. We're already completely in love with her. But
How's the cat?
it's been interesting.
I saw the picture you posted where he's like the dog wants to play and the cat's like step off.
The first night he was pretty angry. But they've both made good progress every day.
Yeah.
So we've gone from being kind of nervous about it to a lot more optimistic,
Yeah.
because every day they've improved. I mean, he's 12, and cats and dogs speak different languages to begin with,
Yeah.
and with them at different ages. But she's learning to leave him alone, and he's gotten a lot more tolerant of her, even just after a couple days.
Yeah.
But they require a lot of attention. Just it's been
Is it because they require attention because you're still on the edge of what they're gonna like maybe get into a fight or something or
it's that and the other interpretation probably of the words. He Before we got her, he would kind of do his own thing for large portions of the day and not really care what we were doing. But now I think he's competing a bit for her attention. He wants to make sure that, yesterday we were all just relaxing, and then she and I went downstairs, and he was sleeping when we left. And if I had just gone down by myself some other day
Yeah.
before we got her, he would have just kept sleeping and stayed up here. But then next thing I know, he's creeping around the corner. Like, don't you leave without me. Like, don't you forget
Yeah.
about paying attention to me. But we've been paying attention to him, and I think he's starting to
Don't
relax.
you forget about me.
Like, Dusty, that's before your time. I didn't know you knew that song.
Yeah.
So,
Other than that little bit of tension, is it pretty cool
oh yeah. Yeah,
between them? Yeah.
every day has been better, and she's been leaving alone, and he's letting her pass by him and get a little closer. Then, she still doesn't like him, like her getting up in his face, but doesn't want to play. But if she walks past him and gets kind of close, but she doesn't really bother him, he lets her go past, and without swatting at her or
Yeah.
hissing or whatever. So it'll just keep getting better. He'll get more and more used to her presence.
Yeah.
But she's here, sleeping nearby. She's doing her first podcast.
You take her for walks or what? Yeah, she liked to walk, to go out.
Yeah, she does. And it helps burn off some of her energy, because she still gets into that puppy mode.
Yeah.
She's sleeping now, but
How old
because
do you think she is?
we think she's 2.
Okay, that's when we got Harley.
Yeah.
And they think Harley had pups too.
Yeah.
She's got all the nipples on the bottom to show for
Yep, so does Maple.
it.
Yep.
But when we took her to the vet for her first one, they were like, it's a 50-50. They don't know if she was just in heat,
Okay.
or if she had pups. He
Yeah.
says she thought she did. I can't imagine little Harleys, man. All these little Harleys walking around.
Yeah, that's one thing that's cool about the process that we got to see, pictures of the puppies and stuff that she had. So it's cool to know some of that history about her.
Yeah.
And I guess she was a, we were able to talk to the foster parents, and they saw her taking care of the puppies and said that she was a good mom, and they were able to tell us, because they had her in their house for 2 months, so they were able to tell us a lot about her behavior before we agreed to adopt her. And they were also, if they were allowed to adopt another, they would have just kept her. And they had a hard time saying goodbye, but Kara's been texting them some pictures of her.
Yeah, we've been doing that with we did that for the first year or two with Harley.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, so it's really nice, to have a dog again, and
Yeah, it's one of those things where part of you doesn't want to do it, to go through it again. You go through something like that, and there's
Yeah.
you're so attached to them. And each one of them has very distinctive personalities and stuff like that. But I was even hesitant. Like, if Barb didn't tell me, Mike, we should get a dog, I wouldn't have probably got one for at least for a lot longer. Do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah.
But I'm so glad that I did, 'cause you slide back into a mode with them, or they
Yeah.
slide back into a mode with you, and yeah.
Yeah, if I was left to my own devices, I think I would have eventually, I might have waited longer.
Yeah.
And that's not right or wrong. It's just being honest about what my instincts were like. But Kara was the one that found her, and I said to her last night, we took a walk with her together, and I said, "You definitely know how to find them."
Yeah.
But it's like you said, it's not a replacement, it's an expansion. It's like
Yeah.
it's another life that I get to have be a part of mine, and it's just another animal to love, so.
Yeah, and there's just something about them, like animals that do something for your, at least for me, for my stress or something. Like, I could come,
Oh, yeah.
it's easier for me to decompress with a dog than without one.
Yeah. Yeah, and she just brings a different kind of energy into the house that we haven't had for a while now. Just with her, she loves her toys and she loves playing fetch. And she's just like, it reminded me when you're talking about Harley with that woodpecker toy.
Yeah.
She's got, we bought her some toys before she got here. And one that we just kind of got on a second thought, like at the last minute, this little alligator that squeaks.
Yeah.
Of course, that turns out to be the one that she's
That she
really
likes the most, yeah.
into. But she just cracks us up. She's just really entertaining, and that it makes you laugh and it lightens your day,
Yeah, I like that. Harley get her toys and just be squeaking them around the house. It's like she's almost trying to communicate with the toy. Like, I could talk to you through beeps.
It's like Morse code.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah. So, but and she snores like sometimes, it's really funny.
What kind of dog is she? Do you know?
She's a mix. We know that she's some lab,
Yeah.
and probably some husky, and maybe some other.
She looks like a smaller dog. Like, ah, man, I just like the lab. I could see she's part lab, but she's got something else in her, especially the ears.
Yeah.
They're so big.
it's hard to figure out where the ears are. Some just in, I wonder if it's just an interesting combination of genes there that produce those things. But
Yeah. A
I was,
husk lab.
yeah. Well, like Kara was saying, well, huskies
A
have ears.
Labusky.
Yeah, lab husky. Huskies have ears that go up, and labs have ones that go down. So Kara was saying maybe they sort of met in the middle.
Is her hair coarse, or is it really soft?
It's pretty soft, and
Okay.
it's she's got a pretty thin coat. Like Luna had more of the husky coat, where her coat was super thick.
She looks to me more like some kind of healer mix.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like a without the color, like she's white, but she has the ears and stuff of like a healer, like a cattle dog that
Yeah.
rounds up the Australian healer or something. She looks.
Yeah, she seems to have some of that instinct because she likes to gather stuff.
Yeah.
You know, she'll bring
That
stuff.
was matter of fact, she kind of has like the ears sort of like of our first dog, Risa.
Oh yeah.
And that's why she reminds me of it, 'cause she was a healer mix. And Risa had one ear that would just stick out and then one ear that would kind of flop down like a pet bull. But when she was alert, both ears were up
Yeah.
in the same mode. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it cracks me up when she'll hear something, and she'll cock her head, and then both the ears will go up real high. And
Yeah.
I was calling it her daredevil mode. Like she's filtering out the sounds. Is that a cry for help? But
So last episode you guys got a car discussion, and this time you got dog discussion.
there you go.
How about that?
Yeah, it's been a little while.
Except
We've
these
been.
aren't retro dogs, these are.
No, but they're. It's not the first dog talk we've had on retro.
No.
I remember asking Norbert when he came on if, because he told that story about buying a little stuffed dog. And I remember
Yeah.
asking him if he bought it because he thought he needed to have it to come on the show. That was just hilarious. I'm a comedian.
So, do you want to start off with questions?
Sure.
Okay. The ones on Twitter are going to be hard to find because of all the different tweets.
I didn't see those. I think I saw a couple on Facebook that you got.
Or maybe those were DC Noise. I can't remember. I got confused because I posted them at the same time.
I'll answer some DC Noise questions. I don't care.
Well, this was probably a DC Noise one, but we'll answer it anyway, because we didn't answer it last night. It says, "What will make you drop a book? What will make you drop a book off your pull list?"
If I'm just not feeling it, I mean, I give myself, I do ratings like you do,
Yeah.
just, you know, for myself. And if definitely a four or a five, you know, I do them out of five also. Those are, that means I'm really enjoying it. Three, I won't necessarily drop off my pull list.
Right, it's something you enjoy. You have a good time reading, but it's not above,
Yeah,
like I
but
wanna.
that would be some potentials if I had to narrow it down for cost reasons.
Yeah.
But usually if besides that though, if it's consistently one that I enjoy, the only thing that would change cause things to change would be maybe a change on the creative team. You know, and if it's a if it's an author or a writer and an artist that I'm not familiar with, I'll give it a try. I'll keep giving it a try. But if it's one that I happen to know I don't like for sure, I'll probably drop off. And I mean, there's, I don't know, I don't know if there's really characters that I'll keep reading no matter what.
Flash.
I kind of am that way with the Flash, but
If you're not enjoying it, you will dump him.
I think, I don't think, depends. Wally West, it's kind of hard for me. It would be kind of hard for me. I feel a little less connected to Barry Allen, but the new 52 Barry Allen is not really the old Barry Allen. It's kind of a combination of Barry and Wally anyways. But I've been going back and forth on this current creative team, not really because of the writing, but I'm just not personally, I don't think he's a bad artist, but I'm not really a fan of his art,
You know what? I'm not
at
either.
all.
I will agree with you.
I'm not saying he's not
Brett
talented.
Booth is good. There's
Right.
just something, I don't know, that I don't like it on my Flash. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't. It doesn't really suit the tone of the book to me. I'm just not, and it's just the style doesn't appeal to me. So I've been kind of going back and forth because I still have that instinct to buy the Flash, and so I keep adding it and then taking it off and then adding it back.
That's the one I'll never ever drop, the Flash, but
Yeah, I should just.
that's just because it's the character and the legacies and the histories, and I just want to read it all. Good or
Right.
bad.
Yeah, and it there's also, I don't have a huge collector's mentality, but it does hit me sometimes. And from, and the fact that I have the entire run of Wally's Flash, and then I have all that in between stuff, like the real short Barry Allen before New 52 and the short Fastest Man Alive and all those in between things. And then there's a part of me that just, my instinct is just to keep it going, just keep the, get all the current Flash stuff that comes out and then keep building my
Yeah.
collection of the Barry Allen run. But yeah, the short answer is usually a change in creative team.
For me, I don't usually drop a book. It has to be really, really, I really don't ha like it.
Yeah,
And
I
then the
mean,
collector mentality turns over sometimes. Like, for instance, Dead Drop. Recently, I didn't like that Valiant comic at all. But then, as the completist in me is like, I have to get this. I have to know it.
Yeah.
And
Do you
that was like a 2 out of 5 for me. But
Yeah.
I still struggled through it. And the art was good. It's just that I really, 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 really think that to me, the writer matters more than story. Even as much as I'm like a Kirby fanatic, like I can't just get a book for its art unless it's certain people, you know? It
Yeah.
ha there has to be some kind of story or something there that I enjoy.
Right. Yeah, there are very few artists that I like so much that it doesn't really matter too much to me.
That's rare for me to pick up
Yeah.
just on art and not have a story that I like at all.
Yeah, I mean, 'cause we're not looking at art books. We're reading comics.
Yeah, which is a combination of both.
Exactly.
It's just that I personally weigh more to the story than I do the art. There's
Yeah, me too.
very few exceptions. Every now and then I'll fall in love with the book because of the art and not really care for the story, but it's rare. But if I that's another reason I rank the books. If I can't If something happened and I couldn't buy all the books that I get, then I kind of know what I'm really loving, you know? So But I it would
Yeah.
it, it would it, for me it's weird. It would probably work its way down to just DC. You know, if I had to windle down, just because of what I'm trying to accomplish and what it is, not necessarily always quality, but Prez is awesome. I don't know if you read the second one yet, but damn, that book is good.
I haven't read either.
Oh, you haven't read either of them?
No, I didn't try it, but
Oh my God.
I probably should have.
It's so in tune with what's happening now. With the elections coming up and stuff.
Oh
It's
yeah.
just so, I don't know. I like it.
That's cool.
So that was a question for DC Noise, but we do have some for this podcast. Ah, Brian's baby. There she is. Oxygen tube. Brian Reigate just had a child, and from Comics and History, and he's taking a hiatus. And every now and then we get baby pictures, which is awesome.
Yeah, I'm very happy for them. He's
Yeah.
couldn't happen to a better guy. I mean,
Yeah.
I've never met him in person, but my impression from interacting with him through social media and listening to his show is that he's a very kind person. It sounds like they're going to be great parents.
Yeah, they will be. So hats off.
Yeah, official Retrocast, congratulations to Brian
Yes.
and his wife.
And as I make my way to our site, William Purcell said, "This is an interesting question because I don't know the answer to this." But he says, "Did Pop Rocks have an expiration date?"
Yeah, that was an interesting question. I do remember Pop Rocks.
Yeah, I remember them too.
I did have some. And I'm wondering if you know something that we don't, if if it's a trick question.
I would think that whatever makes them pop would expire or wear out after a while. I don't know. It's like sugar. Does sugar get bad? Probably. No, sugar
it's
doesn't get bad. Are you saying like if you buy sugar, it doesn't have an expiration date, Barb? It gets hard. But then you just so you say Pop Rocks wouldn't have an expiration date. All right.
Tell her it has sugar, lactose, corn syrup, and
Lactose,
flavoring.
corn syrup, and flavoring. Lactose.
Lactose is like from milk. It's a milk product.
Yeah. Wow, if you're lactose intolerant, you can't have Pop Rocks.
Yeah, I don't know how much they have in them, but they're melted into it's melted into a syrup and then exposed to pressurized carbon dioxide gas. And that causes tiny high pressure bubbles to be trapped inside the candy. And then when it comes in contact with your saliva, it breaks and dissolves.
She says it won't get bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, science.
So it's actually the carbon dioxide being released from the bubbles in the candies that causes the popping.
Yeah, the holes, the air pockets.
It's always the holes.
Always the holes that make the noise and the popping.
It's apparently it's a myth, and I do remember hearing that story when I was a kid that if you eat Pop Rocks and drink soda, it causes your stomach to explode. I remember hearing that, and it's not true. They did a lot of testing, but then they also, because people continued to believe that, they tested it on an episode of MythBusters, apparently.
Yeah.
They tried it with a pig stomach.
I should have tried it with themselves.
Seriously, way to not commit there, guys.
Yeah. Poor pig. Let's test it on this poor pig.
But in the late 70s, the Food and Drug Administration set up a hotline to assure anxious parents that the Pop Rocks wouldn't cause their children to choke or explode.
They had a cereal not too long ago. I can't remember if it was a Fruity Pebbles Bam Bam and what was the daughter's name? Pebbles.
Pebbles, yeah.
Pebbles and Bam Bam cereal that I think had the like a pop rock sensation with it when you poured milk on it.
Oh, maybe. I remember Fruity Pebbles and Cocoa Pebbles and stuff, but I don't remember
This was
that.
a new one. See,
Yeah, sounds
you
like
don't
it.
buy all the new stuff. I explore. Like in my cabinet, I have Fruit Loops, the circular ones. I have Star Wars, the new Star Wars cereal. I have the Avengers cereal. I explore these sugary cereals.
Yeah, and I, whereas
I'm
I,
like a 5-year-old.
yeah, I don't eat little kid cereal.
Yeah. I'm a grown ass man and with a 5-year-old's body. I mean, no, I don't have a 5-year-old's body. And a mind.
Is that why Barb's so frustrated?
Didn't come out the way it's supposed to.
Actually, I don't know what that says about Barb, really.
I don't know what that says about Barb. Yeah. Do you ever read retro comics of properties that were cartoons before they were comics? Yeah.
See, I was trying to. I'd read that question last night and I realized I was too tired to understand it. I gotta say it slowly to.
Well,
So.
comics that are, well, our definition of retro, do you read them if they were cartoons before they were, like G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero was a cartoon before it was,
Oh, okay.
right?
I got you. So it was
That's
a
an
cart.
example of one that I read.
So
Except
anything
that's
that
weird
was a
because
cartoon
I'm only
first.
reading the retro G.I. Joe comics and never watched the cartoon, so that's interesting.
Yeah, I watched G.I. Joe and Transformers when I was a kid, but I didn't read the comics. And then as an adult, I've gone back and read a little bit of them. I want to read more. I've started to read a little bit of both of those, and I want to read more because they. I like most comics from the 80s. You know, it's
Yeah.
a, and so even the licensed properties and stuff. So I'd like to dig in those some more. I'm trying to think of other comics
Voltron.
that.
I just recently read a old Voltron comic and I never, I'm weird. I never watched the cartoon. But I read the old comic, so
Yeah, I've never
I
done
never
anything with
like
those.
got a cartoon and then started to watch or to get the comic. It's usually I get the comic and then realize it was a cartoon.
Back in the day, I did watch the Ninja Turtles cartoon, and I started reading. I used to
That
get
was a
some
comic, but that
issues.
was a comic first.
Well, yeah, but the comic that I read wasn't the Eastman Laird one. It was what was it was Ninja Turtles Adventures.
Yeah, the Archie.
Maybe. I don't remember who published it. I know IDW is republishing those as well, or has been, where it's the style of the. So it was done in the style of the cartoon, where they had the different color headbands and it was all cartoony style instead of. And I found out about the fact that they were a comic book first later on.
I knew they were a comic book, but I never read them before I saw the movie. You know, before I saw the first movie. And then when I saw the movie, it never made me go pick up the comic, even though I enjoyed it. So
Yeah.
that's weird. Man, I can't think of anything like that.
Trying to think of anything else.
G.I. Joe's the only exception to the rule, but I never read the comics, so I don't even know if it fits the question. Like I read old G.I. Joe comics, but as way late, like 10 years ago.
I did. when I first got into comics, in addition to the Marvel ones that I got, my parents also bought me some of the Harvey Comics characters that were around the time. So I had some Richie Rich and Casper the Friendly Ghost and those kind of things, which
Yeah.
I think those were cartoons first.
I think they're comics first.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Might have been almost concurrent.
I don't know, Richie Rich goes back to like the 50s.
Yeah, I know they're old.
I can't say much about Casper. I don't know much about him. I know that I watched a cartoon of Casper when I was a kid.
Yeah, Richie
I
Rich
can think
definitely was
of
a comic
I can think
first.
more of he used the term cartoon specifically, but I could think of other things that weren't cartoons, like Star Wars. I watched Star Wars and then read the comics, you know what I mean?
You know what I had
Battlestar
a lot of?
Galactica, I watched the TV show and then read the comics. What'd you have a lot of?
I grew out of them, but actually, what I was thinking of just now and talking about some of the Harvey comics, they were actually through Star Comics. So when I first started reading comics when I was younger, I had a number of those. That was Marvel's
Yeah, the Star
All
Line.
Ages, because those got actually mixed in with those were in those some of those same packs that had the regular Marvel comics in them. So I had some of those where specifically, and there was some Muppet Babies, Top Dog.
Was Top Dog ever, was it a cartoon? Or was it something that they just created for Star Comics?
It was, I think it might have just been
Like Muppet Babies was
comic book,
definitely
yeah, Muppet Babies was definitely,
a cat that fits into that category.
yeah, they did have, oh, there's a Popples comic book, that's funny. I don't know if you would remember Popples, because they might have been, you're probably too old, I think, but I don't know if I had one or just my sister did, but they were characters. They're kind of like teddy bears, but they're called Popples because you took this pouch that was on their back and then you could tuck the rest of them into the pouch so that it turned into kind of a ball.
Oh, I don't think I've heard of these things. I don't know if I've seen them.
Yeah. There was a Madballs Star comic. Do you remember those
Yeah, I
things?
remember those. Those were just
Madballs.
the balls that had the crazy faces on them, and they were painted really wild.
Yeah, there
The
was actually a
mouse,
comic book.
yeah.
I wonder how many issues that was.
Madballs.
Oh, it was only four. It was a mini series.
Oh no, it was it ran from 1986 to 1988, and it was
Oh, yeah, you're
10
right.
issues.
That's funny.
That looks pretty cool. If I wasn't on my DC kick, it would be kind of interesting to get.
Yeah, and I think
The covers are hilarious.
if I remember
Especially, I like the
correctly,
one where the balls are like trouncing the scientist, and
they
they're it's pretty awesome.
had funny names too. One of them was just called Arg,
First in
Skullface,
Arg.
Freak Ella, Freaky Fullback, Bruise Brother, Bash Brain, Lock Lips, Wolf Breath, Splitting Headache. But if I remember correctly, I think most of the main storyline with the Madballs basically had to deal with young men that tried to make out with women and were rejected. Oh no, wait, that was Blue Balls. Never mind. Got mix things mixed up. The Flintstone kids.
Is the blue balls really a thing? Like, could your balls just swell up if you never.
I don't know if they actually are literally blue. I've never stopped to look, but it's a real phenomenon. It's a real
I never
smile.
stopped like it happened to you. I never stopped to look.
I've experienced the phenomenon. More like when I was younger. And it's like you're making out hot and heavy, and then things stop before you finish your business. And then everything gets sore. And I don't know if it, I know it gets sore. I don't know if it gets blue.
Never stop to look. Yeah, Top Dog and Strawberry Shortcake. I guess that was a toy before it was a comic or a cartoon.
Yeah, a lot of those properties in the 80s, they did a lot of the extra stuff to sell toys ultimately.
Planet Terry.
That's an original, I think. That's an original Star Comics. Planet Terry and Wally the Wizard, I
What
think.
I'm interested in trying to find is Misty, because it was Trina Robbins that did it.
Oh yeah.
Six issues.
And Peter Porker, the Spectacular Spider-Ham,
Yeah. Who's making a
he
comeback?
was under Star. I think I had an issue or two of that. I still like the idea of that guy.
I never did. I like Captain Carrot way more than, but I'm more of a DC guy, so.
Yeah, I only knew who Captain Carrot was as an adult. Oh, Ewoks, I had some Ewoks.
Droids, didn't they have one?
Yeah.
3PO.
I don't know if that was under Count Duckula. I remember that cartoon, Count Duckula. He was a vampire duck. It was a spin-off of Danger Mouse, which I also used to watch, Danger Mouse.
Care
And
Raiders, Care Bears, Chuck Norris, Defenders of the Earth. That was a King Features Syndicate thing. Fraggle Rock. The Get Along Gang. Heathcliff's Funhouse.
I was never a huge Heathcliff fan. I always thought
Garfield is
Garfield was
much
better.
better.
Yeah.
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 Poppies, Royal Roy, Silverhawks,
Yeah,
Thundercats,
Silverhawks is
Wally the Wizard.
kind of a thunder, like that's related to Thundercats.
Yeah.
And Thundercats, they had some issues under Star imprint too. Couple years worth, I think. But
Well, that took us down a rabbit hole.
yeah.
And I think we have two more questions.
Okay.
And those ones are in another location. That's what happens when you post them in three different places.
These are our Pinterest questions.
Pinterest. Joe Crawford says, if you could build a team, not t taking into account how it would sell, whether they have been on a team previously or status as hero or villain, who is on your Justice League, Unity, and Avengers?
Justice League Unity United. Is there something?
United.
Is Justice League Un? Did you say Unity?
Yeah, Justice League Unity's Valiant and Avengers.
Oh, Unity. That
So
was two separate
he
things.
went DC, Valiant, and Marvel.
I was hearing Unity as a part of Justice League. I forgot.
Justice League. I would like to have a Justice League. Man, it's hard to tell because I've liked all kinds of incarnations of them. But I'd like Hawkman in my Justice League. I'd like Green Arrow and Black Canary. Superman and Batman. And he said 5 to 7 members, so that's five. Firestorm. And Dr. Fate. I need a mystical person in there. I like Dr. Fate. I've always liked Dr. Fate.
Yeah, you just finished another series of his, right?
I have every Fate now. Every Dr. Fate with Fate in the title.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now you just gotta get all of his Adventure Comics appearances, right?
that ain't gonna happen.
No.
I was surprised how much I liked, because I started reading some Golden Age stuff, and I really dug. Like, I always thought, like, what are they gonna do with Dr. Fate in the Golden Age? Because, you know, he's got his Salem castle and it has no windows or doors.
Right. Yeah. Like,
enter it. And then you have Naboo, and I don't know. It was really good. I really dug it. And magic has to really kind of win me over. But lately, if I had to go back 10, 15 years, I didn't like magic comics that much. And now now that I'm older, I like Phantom Stranger is one of my favorite characters of all time. Like, I just love him. And then the Spectre, like, I, matter of fact, I'm covering one issue of that today.
Nice.
And I think I've completed that run too. I have to do some checking in the boxes that I haven't inventoried, but I think I have every volume of the Spectre. I have in my database that I'm missing three issues of volume 4, which I think is the Hal Jordan one, and three or four issues of volume 2, which is the one before the best one, that before the Ostrander and Mandrake. That's the best ongoing Spectre. The Adventure Comic Spectre is pretty damn awesome. That goes back to the 70s.
Yeah, I haven't read any Dr. Fate Golden Age myself, but I have listened to the Lords of Order podcast.
Yeah.
Which is on the Comic Book Noise Network also, and that's about Dr. Fate, and I've heard from that show that the Dr. Fate and Spectre Golden Age stories are definitely have a different tone to them, where you might enjoy them even if you're not a fan of other like Justice Society Golden Age stuff.
Yeah. Used to think the Golden Age stuff was impenetrable for me, for my brain. Like, I used to love Silver Age. I love the Bronze Age. I love everything after that. But I am finding now that I'm getting older, from an historical perspective, I am digging the hell out of Golden Age. Like, there's things in there I just didn't expect to see, like, for that time period, you know?
Yeah, it's very interesting, yeah.
The historical reading of comic books and what's happening in society at that time is fascinating. Because you'll get some of that in the stories.
I was just talking about that when I was recording an episode of From Kid to Flash, and I forget how I got on the topic, but I was just talking about how that's one of the things that draws me to DC, because the history goes back of their superhero characters. I mean, this is true to some extent of Marvel too, but having the three really prominent characters of the Trinity exist for so long, I find it really interesting to look at them over that history from the 40s onward and see how the characters have changed and how that connects and reflects society. That's one of the things that draws me to DC, I think.
Yeah, that's weird, because you started off a Marvel guy.
Yeah.
And it's strange how you're kind of shifting a little bit. I wouldn't say all the way, but you seem to be favoring a lot of DC, whereas me, I've always been on the, with some few exceptions, like with Defenders and Champions. I've been a DC guy since I started.
Yeah, I would probably say it's probably fair to say I've shifted more than a little bit. I haven't shifted 100%, and I don't have any Marvel hate. But a lot of times when I do read Marvel, it's because of nostalgia. And I'm in the mood for it sometimes, and there's some Marvel characters I really love. But as far as, and the fact that the Marvel Unlimited app exists influences this as well, but as far as what I'm buying and what I'm owning, it's a majority of it's DC. I find it a rich history to explore.
It's hard to assemble teams. These questions are hard.
Yeah, so with Unity, I don't have as much of a background with Valiant as you do. That one's kind of tough for me.
Yeah, I Unity, I would have Eternal Warrior for sure. I put Warmonger in there. The new character because she's like an eternal warrior and she's foul mouthed, so she'll add like a good personality in there. Ninjak I like a lot, so I'd throw him in there. And Magnus. I don't know. I'd go the future route. It's hard with that because Valiant characters to me stand better. With the exception of what Matt Kent's doing with Unity, they stand better on their own titles. But I guess Eternal Warrior, Ninjak, Warmonger. I don't think I'd put Livewire in there because she's just, I don't know. She seems more like an XO character to me, or a Harbinger.
Is Livewire is the one that used to was a part of Harada's deal, or I'm
Livewire
not
was
familiar.
a Harbinger, Harada.
Yeah, right. Yeah, she was like a part of the.
Yeah, and then she kind of full blossomed in the Unity comic, and she actually absorbed the XO armor, gave it back to Arik. So she took it over like it was nobody's business because she's got the ability to talk to machines and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Well, she does kind of fit. The one thing I like with Unity that they're doing is Matt Kent will like show that this team has been together for ages, like in all historical periods, going
Oh,
back to the
that's
they
cool.
were in the 20s, the 40s, the medieval times, and it's really cool. I don't know. I have a hard time assembling teams. I don't. I like what I like, and I like when other people form the teams. But if I had to form a team, I'd struggle.
I like when teams change. I like when I always used to like the Avengers issues where they had come up with a new team.
I
And
agree with you. I think keeping it like if you always kept the Justice League, it's like Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, and Aquaman, and Green Lantern, and Flash. I would get sick of it. I love when they have like B list and C list and they juggle it up. You got international and stuff like that.
I'm kind of a traditionalist when it comes to Avengers. I realize there's, and maybe because, you're more impressionable when you're a kid and you think that there's a right way things are supposed to be. With Marvel, I'm kind of a traditionalist more so than I am with DC. So with the Avengers, I've just never completely. And not in like a fanboy hate kind of way. Like they can, I fully expect them just to do whatever the hell they want, and then they don't really care. It doesn't really bother me. But if I was in charge of the Avengers, to me,
It's Dr. Druid. That's who you have on there. I know your passion for Dr. Druid.
you're not supposed to talk about
Oh, I'm
that.
so sorry.
That was a private message for a reason. But for me, Spider-Man, like I read him as a solo character that was a loner, so it's always weird for me to see him on teams. It just doesn't fit with my 9-year-old brain.
He never works on a team. To see him or Daredevil on a team.
Daredevil, is another one.
It's just like bizarre. Or even Power Man and Iron Fist. Like when Bendis took over, he added a lot of characters that you never thought would be an Avenger.
Yeah.
You know?
And I can't say that I have a logical argument against that. And I read and liked some of those comics. Like I do like Bendis. But
I know what your team would be. It would be Dr. Druid, Gilgamesh. Isn't he one of your favorite? Demolition Man?
The Demolition Man, the
D-Man.
Oh, that guy. Okay.
The guy that had the old Daredevil outfit.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was thinking of like the Wrecking Crew for some reason, because it sounds like he should be on the Wrecking Crew.
Rage would be on your team as an Avenger.
Oh, right. Yeah, the guy that he showed up in like the 300s.
Yeah. Well, they actually, I don't know if you remember that cover, but I used to always, like you, I used to love the Avengers covers where they would like, who's going to be a member? And then they'd put like 24 characters on the cover or 12 or whatever. And you'd have to try to guess who would be the next Avenger.
Right. Yeah. No, but you know who I would put on the team for real on the Avengers is Hercules, because he was hilarious.
I like Hercules. I think he was a great Avenger.
Yeah, and he was funny too. He caused a lot of problems for the team.
It was weird seeing him and Namor on the same team, though.
Yeah.
Because there's some attributes of them that are so similar.
Right.
Except Namor's just always pissed. He doesn't have he's not humorous, you know. He doesn't have the humor that Hercules could add, or the lightheartedness that Hercules could add to a situation.
I like the Wasp. I think I'm probably nostalgic for the mid-80s era, so I'm naming a lot of characters. Like
She was a good leader.
Yeah.
There's certain leaders that stand out for me in the Avengers history, and she's one of them. I thought she was a good leader.
Yeah, I like that period. Wasp, and you had Black Knight and Captain America. I do like him on the Avengers, but it was cool that he was on the team, but Wasp was the leader.
Yeah. My Avengers would be Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver, Captain America, Goliath. I love them when they were just a small team.
That's cool.
Yeah. I loved when the Cap was with a bunch of villains. I mean, that started off as villains: Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch, and Quicksilver. That's the era I liked. But I like all the eras, so I ain't gonna. We could talk about this whole episode just on these questions.
Yeah, I think Justice League. I would do Wally West, Barry Allen, Jay Garrick, Bart Allen,
Max Mercury,
XS from the Legion of Superheroes, Jesse Quick,
Johnny Quick,
Wally's two children, and there Captain Cold.
To mix it up a little bit. Yeah. My Justice League would be... God, no, it'd be a lot of the Satellite era characters. That's what I remember.
Yeah, I wouldn't want that many speedsters on a team. That would be boring. But I do love... speaking of Jessie Quick, though, I love when she became Liberty Bell.
Yeah. That was cool though, because she manifested both her father and mother's powers.
Yeah. Something about that costume. I don't know what it is, but I
The Liberty
love
Bell
Liberty Bell.
costume.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I
that's
like
cool.
that's a cool costume. I like her. So
Yeah, if I the Unity, I think I'm gonna change my mind. I'm gonna go the old school. I'm gonna pick Solar Man of the Atom, Magnus Robot Fighter, Turok. He would be the interesting one of the bunch because he doesn't fit in. Shadow Man, Eternal Warrior, and yeah, I'll go with those five characters.
no females on the team.
If it was a modern age, I could have an all-female team, because their modern age females are much more interesting to me than the
Yeah.
females of the past.
You could put Roku on the team so they have something to watch.
Roku, yeah, Roku would be awesome. Colonel Capshaw, she could be like the leader, you know,
I
that
don't know who that
organizes
is.
every. She's like the government liaison for like monitoring everything in the United States
Okay.
involving threats or superpowers.
Now
She is a strong character. She's probably my favorite Valiant female right now. Riku is probably second. Livewire you have, which is awesome. You have Faith.
I know who that
Faith would be
is.
the lighthearted character. Who else do we have that's really interesting? You have a lot of the new characters that are in Imperium that are females that I like, but I don't remember their names.
Before anyone gets mad, I actually
Dr. Mirage.
have started reading Valiant again.
Oh, nice.
But I'm just very far behind, but I've been reading it again, and I'll probably catch up eventually. So
Okay,
some
so
of the characters I don't know, but I will eventually know who they are.
what are you catching up on? Just out of curiosity.
I'm right around Unity when it started, so pretty far behind.
I like Unity. A lot of people think it doesn't have direction, but I like it because it's like based on arcs. Like you'll get like one arc, four issues, and it has to do with something, and then another arc, four issues, and then it has to do something else. And there's like some underlying themes, but they kind of like go in arcs, and I kind of like it. Of course, I love Matt Kent, so I'm so biased. But the other Alan Middleton, another podcaster, asks us the favorite genre other than superheroes. I have a tie.
Okay.
I'll answer it first.
Yeah, because I got some in my brain, but I'm narrowing it down.
I love the horror genre. And I've always loved the horror genre. So, like, if there are horror comics, vampires, werewolves, zombies, just ghosts, or any of that stuff, or like Tales from the Crypt kind of stuff, I dig that stuff. I dig it a lot. But there's one. So I'd say horror is a popular genre that I like a lot. The other genre that's kind of taken over the horror genre, and it kind of fits in between horror, sci-fi, and I don't know, it could fit action, thriller, suspense. It is post-apocalyptic. I and Bill Bomer's in this field as me too. I love this genre. Like I love the what if, what happens in the future. And how does civilization survive kind of things. They're like Mad Max and all kinds of stuff like that. I freaking love it. And then the last one I would say, it's hard to say. My favorite post-apocalyptic and then horror, and then the next one would be Western, because I absolutely love like Jonah Hex. I love that comic. And then when I see westerns that do show up in comics, I really thoroughly enjoy them because I like that time period.
That's tough. The three that are in contention for me are sci-fi, horror, and crime
Crime is one that I miss. That's
slash
good.
like slash mystery.
Yeah, like crime noir. Oh, that stuff's great.
And with sci-fi, I am like you that I like sci-fi in general, but if I had to be more specific, I do tend towards the sci-fi that's more dystopian, which usually means post-apocalyptic. But I'm gonna go with, like crime probably is my number two, closely followed by sci-fi and horror. But because crime is something that I also read and listen to a lot on audiobooks, is like Private Eye, like your noir series, detective series and stuff. So.
It's weird because that's a genre I absolutely hated when I was younger. And now it's like one of my top. Like I dig it. Especially when it's cast in like the time period, right? Like 40s and 50s and stuff like that. I dig that. 20s, 30s. God, I just love that, history and storytelling and
Yeah, so I do tend towards like darker themed stuff. Grittier kind of. That's
You
why I
went.
like the new Constantine, the Hellblazer comic. It's definitely got
Yeah.
a horror vibe to it.
You go from Star Comics to dystopian futures and the progression of comics. You started off with Terry and Top Dog and
Yes, Care Bears. And
now
now
look at you. You're a grown ass man
grown
reading
ass man
scary as
reading
shit.
comics about bisexual British men covered in naked and covered in blood.
Having sex with demons
I'm
in
trying to
different
remember.
levels of hell, and then having ghosts trying to save ghosts from disappearing off the face of the earth.
Yeah, I just read number two the other night.
Yeah,
That was good.
I actually love that comic book. That's good.
Yeah, me too. It's close to, if not my favorite, it's close to my favorite.
Yeah, it's one that I won't ever try to read at night anymore, though, because I want to absorb everything.
Yeah,
And
and
I
you
don't want
don't.
to do it when I'm tired.
And Barb doesn't want to have to comfort you when you wake up from your nightmares.
Yeah, with my arm out of its socket. No. Ah!
Oh man. I remember you posted that. Ouch.
Yeah,
I said,
I
ouch.
should have surgery, but I don't want to.
To get replace it with cybernetics.
Yeah, I'm gonna turn into cyborg. Harley,
Yeah.
does your dog like to go in and out, in and out, in and out? Or does she like to stay inside?
We're still getting used to her mannerisms and stuff. She doesn't seem to, because yesterday she was getting real rambunctious and like even more so than usual, and she kept going and looking for the cat, and it was getting kind of close to lunchtime, so I took her out for a walk and she pooped immediately. So like thought maybe that was a sign she needed some exercise, but yeah, we're still getting to know her. It cracks me up how much energy she has though.
Yeah.
She goes into puppy mode. She just wants to play play fetch and wants to go crazy and run around the house. And but thankfully she has downtime too. Like right now she's sleeping.
Yeah.
I figured I'd play with her a lot this morning, get rid of her, some of her energy, because she wakes up like raring to go. It's like, I'm a morning person, a morning dog.
Right. So, do you want to jump into comics and then do the finale of Buck Rogers?
Sure. That works. That works for me.
Okay, so why don't you kick us off today?
All right, let me just get going here. There was a sale this week on Comixology that was Jim Gordon related. They had a bunch of stories that featured him in some way. And this one actually, find it here. I think it was on that they had all of the No Man's Land, which I didn't pick up all of that, but one thing that was kind of related and not related was they had the Batman Day of Judgment special on there, and that happened around the same time as No Man's Land, and I think that it just got included because of that, because it doesn't really deal with Jim Gordon. But I read Day of Judgment, so it was right around when I was getting back into comics, but I never read the special, and it doesn't really have to do with Day of Judgment much either.
What was the title?
Batman Day of Judgment.
Huh, I thought Day of Judgment was the Spectre related.
It is, yeah, and that's, it's just kind of like a one shot that took place around the same time, but okay. Really what it's about is Nightwing and Robin, Tim Drake, dealing with something happening in Gotham City when Batman goes off to deal with the happenings of Day of Judgment. So it's kind of more like, who's taking care of Gotham City while Batman goes off to help out with Day of Judgment. It's by Scott Beatty, and the penciler, I know his name, but the penciler is Dean Zachary, and the inkers are Robert Campanella and Sal Buscema. So I know Sal Buscema, of course. But yeah, it's called Day of Judgment, Original Gangsters. And it starts out with a kind of zombie-looking guy in a suit trudging out of the water. And he actually has concrete shoes. Like, whoever drowned him, you know, gave him concrete shoes like they talk about the gangsters doing. And he comes up out of there and says, good old Gotham, same as it ever was. But then we get a scene with Batman talking to Oracle. And he's telling Oracle that he's leaving Gotham. And she's like, what? You know, she's surprised to hear this. Or says, you know, we're just starting to make progress. If you leave and anybody finds out, it's going to be a free-for-all. It's going to get even worse because No Man's Land is going on, or is maybe wrapping up. But he says, I'm not going to be long, and he's given the watch to Robin and Nightwing. But Barbara's continuing to protest that the JLA can handle it without him. Batman's not confident that JLA can win the fight even with or without him. So he does end up taking off. And so Oracle contacts Tim and Dick, and they have interesting rapport throughout this, kind of as fellow sidekicks. They do a lot of like wisecracking, like they're two brothers, kind of. And they're already out on patrol together and dealing with a guy that. Did you hear that?
No, what was it?
Oh, Mabel, she made a funny noise in her sleep. It's like, whoa. It sounded kind of loud to me, but anyways, this guy that they try to apprehend, this crook, he has a weird reaction, and they think that he's just like drunk or something like that. But because he's talking about how his old man's after him, and says, "You don't understand, my old man went to the gas chamber. He's been dead and buried going on 25 years." So they just think that he's losing it. But then we go back and we see that this gangster zombie like dude, he's going around and he's gathering up old dead partners of his. Like one, it looks like he's kind of like in a junkyard. He opens up this oil barrel and the guy comes out, and then he goes to a wrecked car in a junkyard and opens up the trunk, and the guy comes out of there. Another one's from a cemetery, and then finally they go to a museum, and there's this body on display. It says Tommy Gunn Timmy Malone, shot dead on the docks April 2nd, 1936. And so they bust him out of this display case, and he's like, "Hey Johnny, boys, give a guy a hand out of this fish tank." And so Johnny, the guy that came out of the water with the concrete shoes, they're just, your old time gangsters. He's like, "First things first, Timmy. The fella and me need some heaters. You got a stash?" And so it turns out that this
Do you read that out loud, those scenes? Just out
sometimes,
of
yeah. I don't
curiosity.
always do, but I was having what I was reading his dialogue out loud like that, because it was that old-timey
Yeah,
30s
well,
gangster.
the reason I ask is because when I read accents or slang or that kind of talk, it's easier for my brain to understand it if I say it out loud. I don't understand why it is, but
Yeah, it actually kind of brings some character to the story, because I'm it's easy to just kind of read it quickly in your own voice, or not even to hear a voice in your head, and then but it kind of brings some of the feel to the story. It's like, yeah, you were always planning for the future, like stashing gats all over Gotham for a rainy day, or not showing up at the Walcott the night all of us guys got double crossed by the Tri-Corner gang. So they dig up this Tommy Gunn guy, and then basically to find out where he stashed their weapons. But then they drop him off the docks with a anchor tied around him, so they basically kill him again. Well, the way that Nightwing and Robin get into it is that Oracle has contacts out on the streets, and a couple kids that she has this relationship with let her know that something funny is going on down at the one cemetery that this guy is, that these guys that look like a bunch of mobsters are breaking into a mausoleum, that they, got zoot suits and funny hats on and stuff like that. So she tells him, don't investigate any further. I got agents I can send out." And so she calls Nightwing and Robin. It's funny that Nightwing's telling Robin a story. It picks up in the middle of the story. He says, "So then Killer Moth says, 'Foolish strumpet, I'll tame you in my crystal chrysalis cocoon.' Tim says, 'He did not.' 'Did so. And what did Batgirl say?' 'Nothing. Not a word. She kicked him in the groin and then broke his jaw with a paw knuckle strike.' Needless alliteration always makes the bad guys drop their guard." And so then he goes on to talk about how how Killer Moth used to have a thing for Batgirl. And so then when she calls, Dick says, "Oracle, we were just talking about you." And she says, not the killer moth story again. And he says, no. Look, we got trouble. So she sends them in and says, I think a couple of my kids that are getting themselves into trouble, I told them not to investigate, but they go into the mausoleum anyways, and that's where the four zombie gangsters are getting their... They got this coffin open, and then there's this huge stash of weaponry and stuff. That the two kids, they get in trouble because the one knocks something over, and the mobsters find out that they were there. So they start to... they're trying to interrogate the two kids. They're trying to find out who's in charge. You know, who runs the rackets in Gotham? Rackets? That's right, cutie. You know, liquor, gambling, the unions, where the action is. So she tells her, you know, might be Joker or Two-Face, but there's not much left in Gotham since the earthquake. It's food and supplies everybody's after, but that's the gangsters aren't real interested in that. It's not enough money for them. And one of them comes up with the idea of selling souls. But Robin and Nightwing arrive, and they engage the gangsters. But, you know, they're kind of having difficulty because they're already dead. Robin cracks one across the face with his bow staff, and it doesn't even faze him. He just kind of thanks him for, like, the... for knocking his neck back into alignment. But, so they fight, and some of the people are expecting that they're not going to have any bullets because there's no bullets left in Gotham, but their weapons aren't normal. You know, they're kind of magical like they are. So Oracle in the background, she's doing some research, because the one guy's calling himself Johnny Maggot, and she's able to figure out that the four of them that they're fighting, she finds out all their real names, and that they were called the Robbinsville Regulars. That they all disappeared in 1931. So that kind of gives them some little bit of a background of what's going on. The fight spills out into the cemetery, and there's sort of a funny moment where some like modern day gangsters that look like, you know, the one guy's got like a bunch of facial piercings and look totally different than the old school kind of gangsters, try to do something, try to like encounter the gangsters and aren't able to really do anything about it. But Robin and Nightwing take down a couple of the guys, but Johnny Maggot, he ends up following somehow back to where... Or yeah, he follows one of the kids that's on the run, and they run back to Barbara's place, and she lets them in, but Johnny Maggot followed them, so he busts in through the door, and she goes falling out of her chair. And she's trying to defend herself. She throws some stuff at him, and Robin arrives and like jumps on the guy's back. And then Nightwing gets there shortly after. So the two of them are just kind of fighting against each other when they realize that the gas main is about to blow. So they are able to get out of there just the last second. And that's really the only way that they were able to take him down, was that the gas main blew and the building exploded. So it ends with Nightwing reporting to the rest of them that there aren't any bodies remaining, that whatever happened, they seem to have vaporized. And so they're discussing at the end what they're going to tell Batman, given that the truth is that they fought gangster zombies and that they were consumed by fire. and the last word bubble is kind of funnier. It says where Dick is saying, I think if we change zombies to skells, we'll be fine. Batman likes skells. says, check out more Day of Judgment tie-ins all this month. So yeah, it's a pretty tangential connection there as far as being a tie-in, but obviously
the
I'm
zombies and the mystical part is what the tie-in is, I think.
Yeah, so that I guess is sort of, because it doesn't really spend much time going into explanations about how it happened.
Right.
So I guess you're just meant to assume that it has to do with the Day of Judgment goings-ons.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, it was a fairly entertaining read. It was 48 pages. So I think my viewpoint on it is slightly affected by the fact that I got it for 99 cents in the year 2015.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as opposed to at the time. The art was decent in terms of the storytelling and stuff. Stylistically, you know, I wasn't crazy about it, but altogether, I think it was kind of like a 3 out of 5 for me. Some of the dialogue between Dick and Tim was pretty entertaining. Just their rapport back and forth. I think it had the right tone.
Yeah.
But wasn't sorry I read it, you know.
I read it, but man, I remember nothing about it. When you said Day of Judgment, I was like, there's a Batman crossover?
Right, yeah. That was part of where my
I remember Day of
came
Judgment.
From.
I don't remember this one at all.
Yeah. I know.
But
I
it was a long
it.
Time ago.
Yeah, it's like 16 years.
1999 or something?
Yeah, 99 is what it says.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was an interesting time for the Batman comics, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I started off reading Batman. What is it called? Norm Breyfogle's Batman hardcover.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was enjoying that because Norm Breyfogle's like my favorite Batman artist.
Mm-hmm.
And the bad thing is, sorry, I was eating a mint.
Oh, I knew you were eating something.
One of those, what are these called? York mints, York peppermint patty mints. I ran across another book that he was doing in my database. That's the bad thing about having a powerful database like this is I was like, hey, I didn't realize that Norm Breyfogle, well, we know Norm Breyfogle had the art in Prime, right? But he also, for Malibu, did stuff for the Bravara line. And what the Bravara line was for Malibu was creator owned properties that you know came out from this line. Some of it was like Breed, you know, Jim Starlin. There was a couple others. A Man Called Axe, which I covered on this podcast, I believe, but I covered the DC version, but it was released as a Bravara version first. That's why when I read it, it read like it was a second chapter. It was kind of weird. And then there's Nocturnals from Dan Breeton and Metaphysique from Norm Breyfogle. And what I liked about this one was it was Norm Breyfogle writing and illustrating and doing everything. So I thought, you know, that would be kind of interesting. The story was really weird. I found myself getting lost a couple of times because it starts off with like a terrorist incident and this guy Metaphysique going out and trying to stop the terrorist act, and he gets killed in action. But it was weird because his like wife and kid don't know they. They don't know. They do know he's a superpowered guy, like because they say be careful, Orville, and then he takes off. And the baby. The interesting thing here is I didn't get the linkage between this panel and what happens later on. Is this baby is the focus in present time? So he had a kid. He gets killed in battle, and the baby is now one of the main characters in the story arc. And
okay.
The story arc takes place, and you don't know what reality, and there's essentially this laboratory, and inside there's a scientist, and he's dealing with like five or six characters that are having nightmares and can't sleep and stuff. So it's like a psychological experiment where he turns them into like superpowered
Nightmare
heroes to fight these evil bad guys. And every time they come back from these machines, they feel like physically drained. And the machines are draining them, is he's actually absorbing their energies and trying to become like a godlike without them knowing about it. And one of the kids that's there, Adam, is the son, which I didn't get the linkage until I went to read about it. So when I read about it, things started to make more sense, but the comic as a whole left me kind of confused to make me want to go do some research, because I was like, I'm having a hard time figuring out what was happening, current time versus past, and what was reality and what was not reality. And then when I read the description after I read the book, it started to make more sense. But at the book as a number one, was very, very confusing. So it says here that Norm Breyfogle, when he wrote this, was inspired by philosophy, ancient Hindu, Indian psychology, and movies like Dreamscape, Altered States, and Lawnmower Man to utilize a virtual reality as a story device when he created Metaphysique. And it's a story that tends towards the mystical. It's a group of six people who unknowingly become pawns in an evil scientist's plan to become a god. They think that they are getting treatments for reoccurring nightmares when actually being robbed of their energy. One of the subjects in this test is the son of the long-dead superhero named Metaphysique. That's the piece of the puzzle I was missing in issue one. And then it says Metaphysique returns in the boy's dreams and in the virtual reality programs, and the boy utilizes it to treat his nightmares in an attempt to warn him. The part that was weird, though, is you kept on seeing this Metaphysique, and there wasn't like a caption at the beginning that said, oh, 10 years ago, or like 15 years ago. The colors did look a little bit different, but I didn't know. And then when I saw these superheroes, I didn't know that they were in a virtual reality until after they came out of the machine. And it was really confusing. But now that I read some of the history of it, it's starting to make sense. But the art was awesome. Like, if you're a Breyfogle fan, the art was really great. The characters that are hooked up to the machine, when you learn the backstory of them, they're very, very interesting. And the scientist is kind of interesting. He's always talking to this computer. And there's one character that's always getting beaten, and I can't figure out. He's like a janitor that works in the building, and this security guard is always just beating the shit out of him. And I don't know where they're going with that. It's so weird, you know? It's like this janitor can see Metaphysique even though he's dead. And the security guard just thinks he's wacko and just beats the shit out of him all the time. It's just weird. The guy works there and he gets the shit beaten out of him. I don't know. But I think I liked it more once I started to understand it more, once I did some research. But it was confusing, as far as the story went. And I don't know if that's because he told it, this is like one of his first times writing or something, and it was hard to understand what I couldn't put the pieces of the puzzle together until I actually wanted to go do some research on it. I thought there were three, when I my first read through, I thought there were three stories going on that were unrelated. And then when I got towards the end, I realized they were related because it started focusing on the mad doctor who's trying to become a god. But yeah, I'm glad I bought it. I bought the full run. It's six issues. Norm Breyfogle, so you can't go wrong there.
Yeah, I mean, and he hasn't done a lot of writing all in general, right?
No, I don't think so. He's known for his art. I think he's changing into it now because he had a stroke. And I don't know if he could so much draw anymore. And I've been reading some of his posts. I don't follow all of them on my timeline, but It sounded like he was going into writing again.
That's cool.
Well, I picked up on some stuff that I talked about before. Again, first of all, I read a little bit more Grimjack.
Mm-hmm.
That was, and it was earlier on, you know, it was appearing as a backup in Star Slayer. And I, last time I talked about it, I had finished up the first storyline that ran. This is the beginning of a new storyline. I read the backups from issues 12 and 13 of Star Slayer. And this starts out with Grimjack at Munden's bar, and he's approached by a guy that he knows by the name of Cracker. His real name is Mick Crocker. And Cracker doesn't look too good, and he asks Grimjack, he wants to hire Grimjack to find a killer. Grimjack asks him, "Who's killer?" He says, "Mine." He says, "I've been made into a stinking vamp, man." And he opens his mouth, and you can see he's got vampire teeth. So he tells him a story about how he was hired by a merc named Maston Brook to find his daughter, Miranda, who had been missing for about a week. He finds out she's been hanging out with these aristocrats that are into dressing up like demons and stuff. And that was why she left, because she got in a fight with her dad about doing that. And so he tracks her down to this place. This guy named Wolfingham lives. And he finds her. And then he tries to, as he says it, give himself a little taste. You know me, take a crack, right? She didn't say no, neither. She wanted it, man. Snuggled up good and tight. Well, she was drawing him in because she had already been turned herself. Well, he cracks her one across the jaw, but she just shrugs it off and hits him right back. But she knocks him into a crate that breaks, and that gives him a piece of wood to grab onto. And he stabbed her. He thinks that he's gotten her, but someone comes up from behind him, knocks him out, and then next thing he knows, he's waking up 3 days later, and he's a vampire. So he figures it's the girl's boyfriend, a kid named Grinner. And so Grimjack asks him, "Well, what do you want me to do?" And Cracker tells him, "Find the vamp that did it to me and kill him, and then kill me too, because I don't want to be like this." So he drops like a big sack of money on the table. Grimjack takes the job, and the captions let us know that Grinner was a name that Grimjack used like 20 years ago, and he hates coincidences. He's going to take the money, but he would have done it for free because he hates vampires and aristocrats. So he goes and he goes to a supplier of his weapons and stuff, and he gets a medallion, some vampire dust, some knives that are blessed, kind of, you know, gears up and everything like that, and heads out to a part of the city where, again, this is like the city is where it go. You, as you go through the city, you end up in different dimensions. So he goes to a pretty rough dimension of the city and goes to a place where this Wolfingham, where apparently Cracker tracked the girl down to, and a werewolf answers the door. "Welcome to Wolfie's den of exquisitely forbidden pleasures. What you made up to be?" And he tells him, I'm a demon hunter. Kinky. So he goes in there and he finds Miranda right away. He says, "I'm a friend of Cracker's," and she denies knowing him. While the vampire dust he picked up, it's garlic powder, and he blows some in her face, which freaks her out. She goes running out of the building, and he gets drawn into a trap. He's surrounded by a bunch of men with crossbows. So that's the end of the first story. Second one, chapter two, picks up right where it left off. He's surrounded by all these guys in strange masks, and he thinks at first that it's the aristocrats that like to dress up and stuff, but it turns out that they're actually pros that were hired. It's a pretty cool sequence because at the end of the last story, he gets caught from behind by one who pulls a like a choking wire, like a garrote around his throat, and he's got him trapped like that. And this is kind of a neat action sequence here where he snaps the wrist of the guy, one of his wrists, and then he does a flip so that he kicks the dude in the top of the head, and he's up in the air in the midst of the flip and the flip when all the pe crossbows goes up, go off, so they end up shooting each other, and then he takes a run off. So it's a pretty cool choreography there. So the, most of this is taken up by Grimjack dealing with these pros that were sent to kill him. He, one of them follows him along the roof, and he intentionally leads him. It seems like he's running away, but he intentionally leads him so that the guy falls into a skylight, and then he doubled back and takes out another guy. So then he's coming after a guy that's too far away from him, and he's got a bunch of shurikens that he's thrown at him, so he dives through a window on the first floor of the building underneath the guy, and then he tumbles and rolls in there, and then he just stops and he just stands there and holds his sword out right at the edge of the window, and he just waits until the guy loses his patience and swings down into the window and impales himself on his sword. So that's another kind of neat little sequence. And they got two other guys he takes out. And once that's taken care of, he pulls out the medallion that he got, and he uses a little magic spell, Grouch Mazarsis, Zug Mazarsis. And this is what he uses to track down Miranda. And the stronger the glow gets, the closer he's at. Well, it leads him into another dimension of the city called Suburbia, because it's like a futuristic suburbia. 309 Honey Locust Lane, to be exact. That's how they name their streets in Suburbia. I try to stay out of Suburbia. He rings the bell, and a man answers the door. Grimjack says, "I'm looking for a young girl, runaway, come this way maybe 10, 15 minutes ago." "Sorry, only girl here is my daughter." "And you are?" "Mastenbrook, Lucien Mastenbrook." And there's a girl behind him, stretched out on the couch, reading a glamour magazine. "Who is it, Daddy?" "Just a man looking for someone, Miranda." "Oh, hi." And it's the woman he's looking for, but she's totally scrubbed herself qu clean and is doing the picture of an innocent suburban teenager. But his medallion is glowing like crazy, so he knows something's wrong, and that's how chapter two ends. But yeah, so this was John Ostrander and Tim Truman, as all the Grimjack stuff is. But yeah, I'm glad I picked this up again because it's really cool, and it's, you know, getting into the swing of things. The second story here, I like how you get to see already in the two installments, you get to see how a little bit more of how the city is composed of these different dimensions, because it's one of the things that kind of makes things unique. And I don't know, I mean, I see so many action sequences in comic books, I can kind of glaze over them sometimes. I don't even really, you know, I just process what's
You
happening with
don't
the.
spend time analyzing how cool it is.
Yeah, and I just feel it's like, okay, what's the outcome here? Who beats who, and what happens? What's the aftermath? And it takes a lot, and it's a rare occasion where something there's a sequence that's actually cool enough to take note of and describe, and I'm always impressed by that. So there was a couple of them in this, and it's like it works. It's appropriate because it's like he's supposed to be a bounty hunter, and he's supposed to have that skill level. And so to see that Ostrander and Truman are able to pull that off and show you it and not just tell you it is impressive.
His I noticed that the Black Lamb, which I read on this show too, that character kind of looks like Grimjack a little bit. Because
Okay.
Grimjack's got the fangs, right?
He's got like
Oh, he's
the
got the. He looks like a.
longish kind of gray hair.
Yeah.
And he dresses kind of strange. It's almost like, it's
It's like a
almost,
pirate.
yeah,
Yeah,
part
that's like
pirate,
a
part,
sci-fi pirate or something.
yeah, like a sci-fi pirate. That's a good way. Almost like there's almost like a little bit of like a musketeer, swashbuckler kind of,
Yeah,
like a
yeah.
swashbuckler pirate more than a criminal pirate.
A buccaneer.
Yeah, buccaneer, that's another good word.
I think that's the term they used. My next book I've covered last, I think it was last time. I wanted to finish the story arc. It was Hawkman number 30 by McGreal and Castrillo, who I had never heard of before. But what I really enjoyed about the first book is all the legacies of the Hawkmans being explored in this book. And this issue confirmed everything that I thought was right in the first book. We've had this historical thing of all the Hawkmans. You had like the Caveman Hawkman, the Western Hawkman, and all these like legacies of Hawkman. And the thing that was cool that I liked that they did with this book is in each incarnation, Vandal Savage killed every one of them. So like now Hawkman's dealing with Vandal Savage. And he's pissed off, and he still has all those voices in his head. And that Mar Mother Mary, or the girl with the mutant girl that was trying to help him, is not necessarily able to. She thinks she does, but Hawkman pretty much beats the shit out of Vandal Savage, and he's like, I'm not gonna kill you because of what you do, because they mentioned that like Vandal Savage, the way he lives is he has to kill one of his owns and harvest their organs, of his living descendants, and that's how he sustains his life for, to keep him immortal. He says, "I'm not gonna kill you because of what you did. I want to kill you because you've slaughtered all the Hawk champions for a millennium." Millennia. And that's what I really dug about this is just the fact that they were linking like Vandal Savage to the murders of every incarnation of Hawkman. And I really dug it. I also dug the like the backstory of Mother Mary and his mind, which was trying to take all the voices of the Hawk people out of his head. Matter of fact, in the end he throws Vandal Savage to his death, and ends up saving him because of the character Mother Mary, and she just likes to be called Mary. But it's a cool opening sequence because Lefty, who's the mutant with three arms, he's got two arms on his left hand side. He goes to find the mother of Hawkman, and there's another guy that's with her, and he says, "I'm sorry, but I tried to take Hawkman to this girl who had mutant abilities, and I drugged him to do it, and it didn't work out, and now Hawkman's in trouble," and he's all stressed out about it, and his parents are all pissed off. But yeah, I really dug this book. I dug how he dealt with he ended up not killing Vandal Savage and doing the heroic thing. And then he ended up lying to Mary, saying, "Thank you for helping me lose the voices because they're out of my head." And he actually flew into the sky to like the highest height he could possibly fly until he passes out because of lack of oxygen. And he thought that that might get rid of the voices in his head. But no, he came crashing down to Earth and the voices were all there. So the thing I like about this series is it makes me want to come back for the next issue when I read the last page. because it's like I want to know what's going to happen, and does he get rid of the voices or not? So yeah, this is a really cool book. This is volume 3, or I think it's volume 3. I get confused with all the volumes, but I'd recommend it, especially towards the tail end of it, at least. Especially if you're a fan of like the Geoff Johns era, and you want to see what might have paved his way into what he wrote. You know, I'm getting a lot of the legacy thing out of here. The thing that Geoff Johns did too was do the romantic arc. You know that it was every incarnation that it was a love story, and then they got killed, and then they were reincarnated. And then their love reunited them in each incarnation. And you don't see that here, but you still see Shiera as part of the story arc. And she actually wants to help Hawkman, but he doesn't want her help at this point. So it's cool thing. I'm digging it, and I'll probably read the next one. Like you return to Grimjack, I'll probably return to Hawkman next week.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to hear about because I read the Geoff Johns Hawkman, and a lot of my knowledge otherwise of Hawkman's history comes from just reading or hearing about it, like on the series that Brian did on Comics and History. And that, I think I said maybe this last time, but that run that you're talking about is not one that's discussed a lot.
Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I guess I'm surprised I'm enjoying it as much as I am. I'm digging it.
Yeah. That's cool. All right. Well, the last thing that I read was I did another one of Airboy. And so this would be issue 3. And the cover actually has the Heap on it, which I never read anything, but I know that the Heap was also a Golden Age character.
I think he is, I might be mistaken, but I think he's one of the first swamp monsters or muck monsters, whatever you want to call it, of our time.
Yeah, I would
time.
Think he would be. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he would be, you know, because I'm almost positive he outdates.
Oh, he outdates Swamp Thing and Man Thing for sure.
Yeah.
I just don't know if there's some other. I think he was one of the first. If he's not the first, he's the first muck monster to have his own series, you know? To have like an ongoing thread. Like there might have been like a Marvel horror comic or a DC horror comic that had a muck monster in it, but nothing for his longevity, you know.
That
the Heap had.
So yeah, he's on the cover, which has the Heap reaching out for Airboy, who seems pretty surprised. The Heap's like twice as tall as Airboy is. The cover is done by Stan Wach, WOCH, and Tim Truman. And Tim Truman had done art earlier on, but this issue is actually done by Stan Wach with inks by a guy named Willie Blyberg. It's written once again by Chuck Dixon, and it opens up with the Mysterio guy who looks kind of like a Skeletor kind of fellow. He's skeletal looking guy with a cloak, hooded cloak on, and he's got a belt of skulls. And he and this man named Generalissimo or Orista are in a place, a country called Bogantila, that's been called the last place on Earth for the worst people on Earth. And they have Valkyrie trapped in this odd looking machine, and they have sort of like a alliance of villains where it's just to their mutual advantage. They've got a little bit of dialogue back and forth where they're bickering a little bit. Mysterio is coming after him for the way that he treats the people in his country, as a dictator. And but Mysterio needs Bogantila for the despair in his country feeds the machine and gives it power. Then Airboy is having a dream about his dad being killed, and he wakes up and Hirota and Skywolf are there, and they have a bit of a discussion about his father and how he, even when he was alive, he was kind of a stranger to Davy, the new Airboy. And so they're actually trying to get the help of guerrilla fighters, Guillermo and his people, so that they can get their help to go after the people that that caused the situation that resulted in his father's death. There's like more of a little bit of a light, more lighthearted moment after this, where Skywolf is trying to teach Davy to shoot, and he's doing a pretty bad job so far. When they get ambushed, it seems, all of a sudden someone starts firing on them, and they dive for the bushes. But it turns out to just be this Guillermo that they're joining up with, and he's got this woman named with him, Marissa, who's the one holding the weapon. He says, "Marissa felt you needed practice finding cover." So they just shot at him to give him a scare and cause him to jump for the cover. So they discuss their plan a little bit, but then Guillermo insists that they take him to see this military genius. And he's not a soldier as they expect. He's a shaman. And Skywolf's kind of pissed that they've been walking all this distance to talk to a witch doctor. And they actually give, so it's this old man in a cave, and they give him, in exchange for his services, they give him a bottle of Dr. Pepper. And that makes Skywolf even more pissed, and he's about to take off. It's like, "We climb all this way up to this rat hole to deliver some old geek a bottle of pop. I'm leaving." But then the old man mentions Valkyrie's name, and that surprises and stops him. So the old man, he does actually know quite a
Should post
bit.
that in the pulp culture, pop culture thing. You
Oh
don't
yeah,
see
good call.
a Dr. Pepper show up too
Yeah, that's
often
true.
in
Dr.
comics.
Pepper reference, yeah. Good call, yeah. So the old man actually does give them some valuable information. He tells them that Valkyrie's held prisoner in the capital, and that she's frozen in time. And the reason that they're holding her was to control the original Airboy, that he used the original Airboy's love of Valkyrie to force him to sell the weapons. You don't like this comic?
Did she whine?
Just a little bit. What's going on? That's okay.
She wants her belly rubbed.
Yeah, she loves belly rubs. So they cast some kind of a spell, and that was what trapped his father. And
She potty trained? Yeah.
yeah,
So that
I'm gonna
leads
take.
me to believe she probably was a dog that maybe somebody lost or something.
Yeah, exactly. It seemed like they had started her out, and she's housebroken and stuff.
Yeah, unless the
So.
people that had her taught her.
No, they apparently she came with knowing all of that, so
Do you have to let her out?
No, I think she's good.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I'm still learning, but I think I'll be able to finish up and I'll take her out after.
Okay.
So, this is where the heap is introduced. He's actually behind the old man, and they all are super surprised. Airwolf says, "Holy hell, it's the heap." And apparently the heap came to the old man knowing that he was needed. But Airwolf explains to Davy that it's a long story, but he's called the Heap and he was a friend of your father's. And Davy says, my dad had some interesting friends. So then at that moment, there's some smoke and gunshots coming from the camp of the guerrilla fighters. So they go running and they come upon the village, and there's a bunch of soldiers from the capital and a plane, and they're taking out a lot of the guerrilla fighters and stuff. It's a bit of a slaughter, even as Airwolf and or Skywolf and Airboy arrive in Hirota. They all make it back, and they start fighting back, but there's already a lot of damage done. So Airboy runs off to see if his plane's okay, and Hirota and Skywolf go off to look at theirs. So Airboy goes to, he hears a woman scream and he runs and he finds a soldier who had just shot and killed a 10-year-old girl. And Airboy comes up and he sees this and he's like very angry. That girl was only 10 years old. I watched her playing with a straw doll yesterday. She was making clothes for it out of leaves. And then it switches to the outside where Hirota and Skywolf are running up to the building, and you see the sound effect, blam, blam, blam. And Skywolf comes in, and Airboy had killed, it's his first kill. He'd killed the soldier, and he's holding the girl in his arms. Skywolf says, "We got all of them. The attack is," and Airboy finishes his sentence, "No, it's not over. Not until I find this misery for what he did to my father and what he did to these people. He has to die." And he's holding a smoking gun under his chin. But it just ends with another sequence with Misery, where he's sensing that something is wrong, and that his shipment of some kind of shipment of his is late, but he doesn't seem that his confidence is very shaken because the issue ends with him just laughing maniacally. But yeah, I'm still enjoying it. The different art, I mean, I'm not familiar with the artist, but whether it's his style or is mimicking Truman's style, it definitely has a similar feel to it. So I didn't feel really, I mean, it's been a couple of weeks since I read the issue two, but it had a similar feel as far as what I recalled. That it there is pretty good continuity between the two issues, so
Cool.
yeah, I'm liking it.
Well, I got two more, but I'm gonna try to do them really fast.
Okay.
One of them is we have like a theme going on here between Kimiko First Comics and Eclipse and stuff. But I continued my journey in John Sable Freelance.
All
So
right.
we just talked about his origin stories a couple of months ago. And now we're out of the origin story, and Mike, the artist on his Leprechaun book, returned the script of his origin to his editor, and she said thanks for sharing it with him. And then Phlegm, CC Phlegm, I think that's his name. He's the guy. He's John Sable's alias for writing the children's books about leprechauns. He goes on Johnny Carson. I love this. It doesn't ever say Johnny Carson, but you know it's Johnny Carson. And off
Yeah.
to the left in the chair, you have Ed McMahon just laughing. Ha ha ha. You know, Johnny Carson will say something, and then Ed McMahon will just will laugh it laugh it off like he did. Saturday Night Live, they would do a lot of skits on Johnny Carson, Dana Carvey, and I can't remember who. Phil Hartman was Ed McMahon. That's what this reminded me of it, because it was a character of their. It's a character of that in this episode, in this comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is, once they're done talking about his success and him writing children's, they have a stuntman who's been around the motion picture business show up a lot. His name is Jason Pratt. And what's interesting about the stuntman is he trained John Sable. So when he shows up, he does a double take on Fleming and says, he knows that he's John Sable wearing this. He says, why are you wearing a Harpo Marx haircut, you know, and have this mustache? Why do you look like Harpo Marx? And he says, well, I've changed my career and life, and now I'm a mercenary now. And he's like, oh, I understand why you're doing what you're doing. And so why do you do this? Why do you do children's books? Why do you keep doing it? And he says, there's a lot of damn money in it. So he's doing the kids' books. And then there's this woman who's she was an ex-prostitute who lost her husband to a mob deal. And she's going to tell who the killer is. And she's in witness protection. And they send the decoy out. And the decoy gets killed with a bazooka in the car. They just blow the shit out of it. And they're like, holy shit, they want to kill this woman before she gets to court. Let's protect her. And they killed the decoy. But when they go back upstairs to see what's going on, she's missing. And turns out she gets hooked up with John Sable to protect her. And John Sable uses this one guy to find her. He looks like he's a shorter person in stature, one of the small people. He shows her location and says where he might be able to find her, and he finds her at a strip club. And so they go to a strip club, and he fights a bouncer, and he finally finds – she was decoying herself as a stripper – because she had been a stripper before and she was doing it as a blonde. But as easy as John Sable found her at the strip club, so did the bad guys. So they come following, and there's a lot of gunshots and stuff that pursue.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes over to his editor's house because he doesn't know where else to go with this stripper. And there's kind of like some jealousy going on there. Eden answers the door, and she's just wearing a shirt. And the stripper comes in, and she's wearing a bathrobe. Very sexual book. And there's some tension there because Eden looks up and down her like she's competition or something, you know. And so John Sable gets ready. He sees that they're coming after her. They send a whole squadron up this abandoned building to kill them both, and he basically fends them off, and then they destroy the building. So the guy that's after her, that's on, his name is Joe Baylor, he thinks he killed the girl that he was after, that he's the one that's on trial, and he just goes away. But John Sable managed to save them in the explosion going on one of those tractor cranes, and they survived. And then he has so she was able to go to court and take this guy on, take him down. And then there was like a comedic ending to it, like in Buck Rogers always, where the stuntman guy shows up as Zorro and has a little sword fight with John Sable. And actually says, I taught you well, but I didn't teach you everything I know. And he ends up winning the sword fight. And the girl, as he leaves, says, who was that masked man? I thought that was funny. But this one's highly entertaining, and Mike Grill's art is so awesome.
Yeah.
I dig it. And then the last book I want to talk about was The Spectre. It was the only issue of The Spectre that I didn't have from Volume 3. So I have a full run of that now. This was the most popular run. I think it was the longest running run of The Spectre as well. It had the glow in the dark cover that launched with number one. And it was a real dark tone. And what I really loved about this is it combined history and mysticism. And it started off with this artifact. Some guy was taking his daughter away, and they were talking about slaves and stuff. And he gave the talisman to, I think it was Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, I think. They were talking about signing the Declaration of Independence or something like that. And they had to give up one of their slaves, and the girl was like, "Why do we have to give him up? He was a, you know, he was one of our best." She thought of him as a friend, but it had a lot to do with slavery. And then there was the death of one of the slaves, and this one guy kind of buried all these in this cemetery. There was a bunch of dead black slaves that happened. And he buried them, and then you cut to another time jump, like in the 20s or 30s, when the mobsters were around. And Corrigan was there in that time as a cop, and he was like, "You know, we really shouldn't let this, we got to stop this building. This is a crime scene," because they found all the dead bodies of the slaves. And they started to dig them up, and you get some cool backstory of how Corrigan. His mom and dad, and they actually had a housekeeper, and the housekeeper lived with them, and she had a son, and he was black, and he grew because one of the detectives asked him, "What do you think of black?" It was kind of like a racist mark, you know. These are just black slaves that are buried here. Let's just put the building over their coffins. Do you know what I mean? And he was like, "What do you think of black guys?" And he's like, I have only known one really well, and he was my brother." And the awesome thing about that was he really was his brother, because it insinuates that the father had sex with the housekeeper and had this boy, and the mother found out about it and then kicked the housekeeper out. And he kind of lost his best friend, but he also lost his brother. So that was some cool story about Corrigan. And this guy that owns the site that they're gonna drop cement over and stuff, Corrigan wants, he says, "Why don't you respect the dead?" And he says, "Are you gonna stop me from building on my property?" And he says, "No, I can't do that." So they actually build over that property, and that building comes into effect later on, because it was City Hall. And they introduce this little black girl and her mom, and they're going to see their father, and they're getting divorced. And he's pretty well to do. And the little girl was given this talisman, part of that talisman that we saw in the first one. And she sees like this ghost, and she's able to talk to him, and it's one of those slave guys. And she essentially, by touching this talisman, spawns off a bunch of the slave ghosts, and they start attacking all the white people in the building. "Don't touch the black people." And Spectre's alerted. He knows about the talisman. It's really cool too, because they mention like Uncle Sam, and they mention one of DC's pirates, Captain Fear, which I really dug. So, you know, Uncle Sam is one of my favorites. They talk about this talisman being part of a mystical device, and Uncle Sam having to deal with it in the past. So I dug that part of it, because I'm a huge Uncle Sam fan. But the Spectre came, and he dissipated the ghost, and he actually freed the ghosts from the building, and they were actually released to live in peace after that. And the one villain he had stopped, he actually killed him. He used like his ghost images. He made two saws and sawed off his hands and cut him into like a billion pieces. And when he did that, one of the hands they couldn't find, when they picked up the body, they couldn't find all the pieces. And one of the pieces that was missing was the hand. And the hand walked off with the talisman. So even though it was detached, it took off with that talisman that they were talking about that went back all the way to the Revolutionary War and the signing of the Declaration of Independence and stuff. So, yeah, this book was awesome. The thing I hate about these books is these books, a lot of the books that I picked to read are filling a hole in my collection of books that I've already read. But what they cause me to do is they want me to go find them so I can read the next issue.
Right.
And in this case, it's not going to be an easy one to find because it's in the long boxes, not the drawer boxes, and I have to lift all kinds of boxes. So, like, I really want to read it because it ended on a cliffhanger, but I probably won't continue. But, man, it was good. All the comics I read were really good. The Metaphysique was a little confusing, but I enjoyed it. So I was pretty happy with the ones that I chose this week.
That's cool.
And I guess we can jump on to the final episode of Buck Rogers. We did it!
Yes, we're finally here. We made it through. Watched all of season two. I'm glad that we did.
Yeah.
Though, this story is called The Dorian Secret. And I don't know if you want to go through it before we give our overall thoughts. But I have a sense that we felt similarly about the episode.
Let's start with our overall thoughts and then summarize it. It was a weird finale, that's for sure. It's almost like it was just a regular episode. It wasn't nearly. I would have rather them have ended on last week's episode because I thought that episode was really strong. You know, to end on a strong note. Yep. Plus, it like had linkages to the first episode, and I really dug that.
Right.
This one did too. Do you remember that one mutant that could phase through the walls that wore the mask? I think it was the same alien group.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
I think. I'd have to go back and look at it. But
still not strong as strong of a connection.
Not as strong as a connection. I like certain parts of this. I like the whole plot, like this woman's escaping a murder and hiding, and Buck tries to rescue her. And then these guys are like, you can't take her. She's a murderer. And I thought it was funny. I had a really good time with the hot, cold thing. They would essentially shine a beam on, it says, until you hand over the murderer, we're going to like cook you. Oh no, we're going to freeze you. And now we'll cook you. Yeah. And they put extreme temperatures on the ship and kind of kept them within the tractor beam so they couldn't escape until they turned over the thief. I really like that, and I like the tension of the people aboard the ship and wanting to turn her over. You know, some people wanted to side with Buck, and then there were others that let's turn her over. And some of them were on the fence, but, you know, hey, we could lose our child here. Let's think about this.
Yeah, and it wasn't the crew of the searcher. It wasn't the crew of the searcher. They were people. What were they being transported somewhere?
Yeah, they were transported. I think their world had been destroyed or something, and they were transporting them to another safe place. So they were all like just passengers on their ship, and like Wilma was the stewardess. No, I don't know. She sure seemed like one.
That's
in that
exactly
episode.
What I thought too. Yeah, at the beginning, she seemed like a stewardess. She said she's their liaison or whatever, but she was acting like a stewardess. But
I like the chit chat too. I liked the fact that they were like, "Well, what do you do for a living?" You know, people that are waiting to like fly, and the guy's like, "Well, I do kind of like magic stuff, and I'm a gambler. Do you want to bet?" You know, on all this stuff. I like that character. I thought he was interesting. So yeah, Barb didn't like the episode, but I thought I liked certain aspects of it, and it wasn't nearly as strong. It was a weird finale
Yeah,
of
it's almost like they didn't know they were ending or something,
yeah.
because it's there's no sense of a finale to it at all. It just stops, and there's no
They didn't
sign that
really
they knew.
feature any of the characters except for, none of them were prominent except for Buck. I mean, Hawk had a few scenes and Wilma had a few scenes, but it was all, Buck trying to rescue this girl for murder. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I felt exactly the same way. It wasn't a terrible episode. There was some entertaining aspects of it, and the last episode would have been a much better finale to the series. And I always kind of think of it in my own mind as the finale of the series, the way that it ties into Buck's past and everything. But taking it just as any old episode, not the last episode, it was interesting. I mean, it kept my attention. It wasn't the greatest episode, but it was decent. It had some interesting ideas to it, and I think the ending of it all sort of improved my overall feeling about the episode, because I didn't really see the ending coming. There's a bit of a spoiler here, just as a warning, but these Dorians, they all wear masks, and the woman that's on board the searcher that's accused of the murder, she loses her mask in the course of getting to the searcher and being taken on board. So that at first keeps people thinking that she is Dorian, but
Or that she's not Dorian because she's looks like a human.
right. And they keep talking about how, like, well, we wear the masks because we're all mutants. And we saw a little bit of first season Buck where she's telling that to Buck, and he says, "Mutants? You're one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen."
And then I like how you find out what the guy is like a mutant too, and they unmask him. He's like, "Man, you're a good looking man."
Yeah, so what's going on? Because.
Let's have an orgy.
Yeah. So yeah, the spoiler is that there's a reveal at the end where the investigation of the woman is all being led by this one guy, and it's his son who has some mixed feelings about her being killed, and he has a good reason for that. The guy that's killed was the man's son and his other son. So it's his brother who has mixed feelings. Well, it turns out that it was actually an argument between the two brothers that caused the other brother to die. They were arguing about the
The
whole thing of
masks.
wearing masks and stuff. And Buck's like, finally, like, kind of like, well, what the hell? Like, the son takes off his mask. He's an attractive guy. He's like, "You're attractive. She's attractive. What are you guys
We're
talking
all
about?
attractive. Come
We're all
on, let's get it
attractive. Like,
on.
what are you talking about, mutants? Like, I don't get what's going on here." So the leader finally says, he's got all these henchmen around him. He said, "All right, well, let's show him." And one after another, the henchmen take their masks off, and they have the exact same face as the son. And finally, the leader takes his face off. Yeah, his mask off, and he has the same face. And I didn't see that coming. I thought that was pretty clever. Like,
That was a clever ending, wasn't it?
yeah, and it
I was like,
improved
that's
my
pretty
overall
cool.
feelings about that episode. Yeah, the only thing that they
I
kind of
thought
messed.
they were gonna have like some kind of like mutation, like fucked up eyes or, something really messed up.
Yeah, the thing that I thought, the only thing I could come up with was maybe the leader's face is disfigured, and he convinced everybody else that they needed to wear masks too because of his vanity. But I mean, and not that that necessarily stands up, but that was the only thing that crossed my mind, because I don't really try to figure stuff out when I'm watching it. But I like what they had as well, because it still fits. You know, it would be kind of crazy and also kind of confusing if all the men had the same faces and all the women had the same faces. Like, you'd feel no identity and you'd want to wear a mask because then you could customize the mask to look how you wanted, you know?
Yeah,
And
yeah.
you could have some individuality. So,
They
yeah, it's a really interesting idea. They
well,
could probably do even more with it.
They did a good job of making us think that they would look really different underneath those masks.
Yeah.
Because they kept on focusing on the one woman that was wanted for murder, and she, like, when she saw her reflection, she'd freak out. So it's like, was she like a mutant? Did she somehow made herself beautiful? Do you know? That's what I was thinking. She used some kind of science or something to make herself look like a human. Because when they use the term mutant, I think of like mutated or nuclear exposure to something that deteriorates your face or something. So I thought like these guys would look like weird underneath their masks, and they kind of twisted it around as it's like the star-bellied sneetches of Dr. Seuss, and you know, they want to be different.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's weird. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, the other thing I thought, and they actually had something in the script to sort of make you think this, because she says something about like Eye of the Beholder and all this, was that, you know, maybe this is just a different culture where what we consider as earthlings, what we consider beautiful, is not what they consider beautiful, you know? And so maybe even though we find them beautiful, they think that they're ugly, you know? And it's just a cultural difference. And she says something about the Eye of the Beholder and stuff like that to Buck to sort of lead you into thinking that a bit, I think. So, you know, the overall execution of the story was not the best, but the idea underlying it was pretty interesting, and I could see more being done with it.
You could say that about this whole season. There was some like episodes that had some really good ideas and stuff behind them, but they weren't executed to the best of. The effects weren't there, and
yeah,
it was kind of done at a lower level, in my opinion, than the other season.
I agree, but I'm glad that we did it, though.
Yeah, I am too, because I would say more than half of them I hadn't seen before. I don't know why, because I was a loyal season one. I had watched everything, and for some reason, I guess season two kind of. Whenever it came out, I must have lost interest or didn't see all of them. And so this was like a new one. I don't remember this one at all. Or the one before last, the trial one. If I was a kid watching the trial one, I probably would have been bored. but I really enjoyed it now, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm glad just for having seen that episode. As I said when we talked about it, even if someone didn't like the first season, didn't want to watch the second season, they should still watch that episode.
Yeah, that was good.
It acts kind of as a nice ending to go back and deal with Buck's past, to talk a little bit about the apocalypse and all that, and how it ties into the lore of this show. That was a good one.
Not too much from Twiggy. I don't think he said a word in this one. Crichton had a few lines, but
he had a little interaction with Dr. Goodfellow. They were talking about some of
how long they had to live.
If
the heat kept up, basically.
Yeah, it was funny when the hot scenes. That was one moment that was kind of made me laugh, and I don't think it was intentional, where they were showing the hot and the cold.
Yeah.
And it would be like, okay, everybody puts their jacket on. Okay, everybody takes their jacket
takes
off.
It was
kind
like
of silly
musical
direction.
Chairs or something.
Yeah.
It
was too coordinated and synchronized. But
put your blanket on. No, take your blanket
take
off.
Take your blanket off. And so
some
that
of those
was
guys in the cabin silly. Though were dressed really warm. I would have started taking layers off.
Oh yeah.
So that wraps us up. And so what are we doing next time? Are you able to get Dragon Slayer? Or?
Yeah, I should be able to get it for next time. And then I'll come up with some choices this week for the episode after that.
Okay.
Which that'll be a month from now, so if we do Dragon Slayer next.
Yeah.
But I'll come up with some soon. I'll see if I can do something that's Netflix instant just to make it easy, but unless I get my heart set on something else, but I think I could probably come up with some options from there. And then in the meantime, we can start discussing some ideas about what we want to do after that.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, very cool. You can reach us at www.geekbrunchpodcast.com. Our Twitters are at MythMakingETC and at Mike Myers Brunch. Emails are MythMakingETC@gmail.com and Mike@comicbooknoise.com. Facebook, you could search under Geek Brunch Podcast. David Levine left us a message about the Superman Generations, right? The John Byrne one.
Yeah. He was asking if I have read it, which I hadn't, but I thought you probably had.
No, I hadn't.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean,
I
I'm.
stuck away from like why I miss a lot of annuals and
Oh,
Elseworlds is
right.
because I was like, this isn't in continuity, so I'm not worried about it. Things have changed now, but
Yeah, but yeah, it's a lot,
I'll
right?
have to get it if I want to get my if I want to complete my everything since 1973,
True.
so
Yeah.
I'll have to get them at some point.
That's true.
I think that's it.
Yeah, I think so.
So, Dragon Slayer is on tap next week. I'll probably tell you right now that I'm going to read the comics too, because
Okay.
I have the adaptation I bought.
That's cool.
I'll probably read those. That's pretty cool stuff, though, 'cause it's got like Denis O'Neil's writing it, so I like the
Oh.
stuff.
Yeah, I've never read anything by him I didn't like.
Yeah, so it should be a good adaptation. And the artist is a popular one. I can't remember if it's Marie Ser 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 I can't pronounce her name.
Severin?
Severin, thank you.
No problem.
So I'll probably dig those out and read. Those will be my comics that I read for the episode since I bought them.
That would be a nice
I'm looking
combination.
forward to watching that then on the elliptical this week. For me, it's a refresher, but I love that movie. I've seen it 3 times, so but I haven't
Oh,
seen it in at least 15 years, so it'll be interesting.
nice. Yeah, that's a good break or a good gap of time to sort of be ready for another look.
I remember it came out at the around the same time as Clash of the Titans, you know? And Clash of the Titans had a lot more action and stuff. But the one thing I remember about Dragon Slayer is I just love the plot. I love the whole idea about it, you know? And so I'm excited to watch it again, to see if I still feel as if I love it as much as I did then.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I will, but
Cool.
who knows? All right, well, I'll talk to you later.
We'll
Say
find
hello.
out.
Take your dog for a walk. Let her go pee pee and poo poo. And
Yeah, Daddy's gonna pee pee first and then
you
take
could
her to
go
pee pee.
together. You could just go outside with her.
Yeah, I'll just distract attention from me.
Yeah.
I'll squat next to her. Just hopefully nobody will notice that there's
Nobody.
like some liquid coming out of
There's
the
a
bottom of my shorts.
grown ass man peeing outside.
It's like, oh, that man's just squatting next to his dog. That's kind of weird, but wait, why is there liquid coming out of his shorts?
Yeah.
All
All right, well, have a good one, brother.
right, you too.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah.